hope you're all planning to join us on Wednesday night at the Rialto as we're going to see this movie, Amazing Grace, the story of William Wilberforce. Some of you will have arrived late and missed Graham's presentation about it at the beginning of the service, but you can pick up tickets in the foyer afterwards for only $8, cost price. It'll cost you a lot more if you go to see it when it's released for general distribution next week. So we really hope you'll join us. This is going to be a really good night out for the whole church together. And it's a very, from what I've seen of the movie, it's very, very good. And it's just a wonderful story. But this morning, we're doing the second week in this series that we're doing on relationships today. And this morning I want to talk about covenant love. It's really, this one's about marriage this morning. And some of you will be contemplating marriage and wondering, what am I letting myself in for? Some of you are recently married and you've woken up and think, what have I let myself in for? And so I want to talk about this morning. And to do that, I want to talk about the marriage vow. So I want to talk about covenant love. And there is no better expression of covenant love than the traditional marriage vow that's been used in wedding services over the last few centuries. And so I don't actually have a text as such this morning, although there'll be a number of texts in the course of the message, unless the text is the marriage vow itself, which does actually come out of a strong biblical worldview, as we'll see as we go through. I want to do this because over a number of years now, I've sat in wedding services and listened to people exchanging vows. And I felt over the years, what they say to each other is getting more and more kind of new age fuzzy speak. You know, I sat there one day and heard people give a vow to each other that they would authenticate their personhood. And I thought, good night, you know. Do they have any idea what they're committing themselves to doing? I don't know how you authenticate someone's personhood. Perhaps someone can explain it to me afterwards. And I've decided, you know, if you want me to marry you, you're only going to get it on one condition. That is, you have a traditional marriage vow. And because to me, it embodies what the whole thing is about. Last Sunday morning, I talked about the basis for marriage, which is mutual servanthood. And the traditional marriage vow expresses that incredibly well. So here's my text for this morning. Here we go. I, Murray, take you, Marge, to be my wife according to the will of God. 4 points this morning that I want to get out of that. The first one is that marriage is part of God's purpose for humanity. Right at the beginning, back in Genesis chapter 1, where God has this kind of soliloquy with himself, and he says, let us make humans in our image. This is what we read in Genesis 1:27. So God created human beings in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. It's very interesting that biblically, it's male-female together that reflect the image of God. It's not just male. God is not a male, and God is not a female. God is beyond human categories of sex. It's male-female together that reflect the image of God in us, because God exists eternally in community. Christians don't believe in one solitary God who exists in isolation, but a God who exists in community, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, so that us as solitary individuals cannot totally reflect the image of God. Which is actually a profound, profound thought. Because the ultimate human punishment, short of death or torture, is actually solitary confinement. If you want to really punish someone, you lock them up all by themselves, because God did not intend us to be like that. And so marriage is one expression of intimate community. But it isn't the only one. And it isn't necessary to be married to be a complete human being. Later on in the series, we're going to have it one Sunday looking at singleness. And singleness is a calling as much as marriage is a calling. And it isn't necessary. The most complete human being who's ever lived was a single man. And Jesus gives us an example of a complete human being. Jesus found his unity in being surrounded with a group of disciples. And if you are a single person, you actually have to work harder at community than a married person. But marriage in itself doesn't solve your relationship problems. The writer of Proverbs knew that only too well. Proverbs 25, he wrote, "It's better to live on a corner of the roof than to share a house with a quarrelsome wife." Presumably he knew what he was talking about, otherwise why would he have written that? But marriage, a good marriage, is the ultimate human experience of intimacy and connectedness that can ever be found. Genesis chapter 2, for this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and they will become one flesh. Among trendy people today, marriage is kind of out of vogue, and people say, you know, why would you want to get married? It's just a piece of paper. No, it's not just a piece of paper. It's part of God's eternal purpose for humanity. Marriage is not something that a bunch of people got together and tried to figure out, now what's the best way to get on with each other, and came up with this idea. This was God's intention for humanity. It's a reflection of the purpose of God. That's the first point about marriage. Second point about marriage is that it's about total commitment. In the marriage vow, it says to have and to hold from this day forward. I remember one time someone was talking to me about marriage. They were having difficulties in their marriage, and they said to me, of course, marriage is a 50-50 proposition. Marriage is not a 50-50 proposition. Marriage is a 100-to-nothing proposition. Marriage is about total commitment. I take you to be my wife, my husband, to have and to hold from this day forward. I'm not holding myself back. This is 100-to-nothing. I am yours, you are mine. I am totally committed to you. To have and to hold actually refers to the physical dimension of marriage. Very important to see what this vow does not say. It does not say to have and to withhold, because sex in marriage is not a reward or a punishment. It's part of intimate union. Have and to hold. I am yours and you are mine. It's a wonderful picture of intimacy, care, and love, and respect. It's a total commitment. Have and to hold from this day forward. There's an actor named Richard Harris, and I came across a quote from this man this week, and he died actually just 5 years ago, but he plays the part of Professor Dumbledore in the Harry Potter movies, and there is there, not that I've been to see any of the Harry Potter movies, but I read about this guy, I read this quote of his, and when they were casting for the Harry Potter movies, for the series of movies, they wanted to sign people up for the whole seven movies they were going to be making. And so they asked this actor, Richard Harris, if he would sign on for all seven movies. This is what he said. He said he did this very reluctantly. And these are his words. "I hate that kind of commitment. I hate the idea that my life in any way is sort of restricted. That's why my marriage is broke up. I hate commitment, and I'm totally unreliable anyway." Well, at least he's honest about it, I suppose. Then he wonders why didn't my marriage work? Well, marriage is about total commitment. Marriage is an expression of God's purpose for humanity. It isn't just a bright idea. And marriage is about total commitment. The third thing, and the main point I want to make this morning, is that marriage is about a covenant relationship. "I take you to have and to hold from this day forward, for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health." This is a covenant relationship. Covenant promise is an unconditional promise. The word covenant isn't used much in modern English, and so its usage, its understanding of its usage has kind of faded. And a lot of us wouldn't know if we were asked, what is a covenant? We'd be a bit stumped to know kind of how to explain it. But a covenant, so I thought I'll explain it this morning. A covenant is an unconditional promise. You promise something with no strings attached. I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. Because you make a marriage vow with no idea what lies ahead. No idea. Things may go well, things may go badly, but I will love you. You may end up with fabulous wealth, or you may end up in grinding poverty, but I will love you. You may be a picture of health right through your life, or you may be stricken down with some debilitating illness, but I will love you. That is the nature of a covenant promise. That is covenant love. It is unconditional commitment. That is light years away from the contemporary understanding of the marriage relationship. This is the main point I want to make this morning. We live in a world that has abandoned the biblical understanding of marriage, often because people haven't even understood it. This is the nature. This is God's intention for marriage. I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. You see, what the contemporary understanding of marriage is all about is that I really want to find someone who will meet my needs. So I look for someone else to meet my needs. Marriage on that basis will never work, as it's not working in our society. What you need for marriage is two strong individuals who are fulfilled in themselves and who can stand together and help each other be strong. But what we get today is all sorts of emotionally needy people who need someone else to be married to, and they lean on someone. So when the pressure comes on their relationship, you know what happens? The marriage falls over. And so to go into a marriage, the first of all, you need to be strong in your own relationship with God. You need to know who you are as a person. You need to know that you're forgiven and strengthened by God so that you can bring the strength to each other. I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer. I don't need you to lean on to meet my needs. But these days, the contemporary thinking is, I'm looking for someone, because I'm a needy person, I'm looking for someone who will meet my needs. Now, I find this even among biblical-believing Christian people. This has become rampant, this understanding. People no longer, you see, it's not the marriage of two Christian people that make a Christian marriage. It's a commitment of in covenant love that makes a Christian marriage. And yet today we have Christian people with no understanding about Christian marriage. And so when the person's not meeting their needs, they leave them. It's astounding. For 2,000 years, Christians have never seen that as an option. Only in the latter part of the 20th century, suddenly this became an option for people. Oh, things are going rough, I'm going to walk out. I'm going to do another message later on and about divorce, but, you know, and grace does extend, but this is not God's intention for marriage, not even remotely. You know, I've had conversations with people, you know, why did you leave him? Was he violent? No. Was he abusive to you? No. Did he come home drunk? No. Did he financially neglect you? No. Did he spend all his time down at the boozer with his mates? No. So why did you leave him? I just felt he wasn't meeting my needs. So I left him. Where do you find that in the Bible? Where in the teachings of Jesus do you find justification for that kind of attitude? It's not there. So why are Christian people coming out with this? Unbelievable. We've betrayed the gospel in our understanding, because we now live in a world where everything's about me, about meeting my needs. And I go away from a conversation like that and think, Who has become the center of your universe? The answer is obvious. You have, if you can think like that. You see, there's been a huge failure to understand the nature of covenant love, because legally, you see, a marriage is a contract. And so people go into a marriage thinking, I'm entering into a contract. Now, legally you are, at least in the eyes of the law. But a biblical understanding of marriage is far more than just simply a legal arrangement. You see, a contract and a covenant are not the same. In actual fact, they're complete opposites. And a lot of people have never understood this. You see, a contract is a conditional promise. We're all familiar with employment contracts. You enter in a contract with your employer, and you agree to provide your employer with certain services, and in response, he will provide you with a job, and he or she will provide you with a job and a wage and so on. That's a contract. So people come into a marriage relationship thinking it's like a contract. And I have certain expectations for him or her to fulfill. And if they don't fulfill my expectations, then I will walk away from this. Trouble is, often people don't even know what the expectations of the other people are. And so when someone, the partner walks out on them, they're left absolutely bewildered. Why did they go? I had no idea. What were these needs that I wasn't meeting? See, a covenant promise isn't about waiting for the other person to keep their side of a bargain. The covenant promise is about my commitment, my unconditional promise. I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. Regardless of what happens, I'm saying to you, I'm going to love you. Now, we Christian people ought to know, or those of us who have made a Christian commitment, ought to know about a covenant promise, because this is the very heart of the gospel. This is actually what the gospel is about. See, God doesn't relate to us in terms of a contract. He doesn't say to us, if you fulfill certain conditions, if you keep your side of the bargain, then I will love you. That would be hopeless. Now, most of the world thinks that's how you encounter God, that you have a whole lot of laws and traditions and regulations and so on you have to keep. And if you can keep these, you will earn the favor of God. That is impossible. How could anyone ever be good enough to earn the favor of God? I could keep every rule in the book till I was blue in the face. I would never make myself acceptable to God, ever. It's a crazy notion, yet it is believed by the greater part of humanity. If God related to us in terms of a contract, none of us would have any hope. But the kids in their reading this morning, they read to us the wonder of God's covenant promise. Because in Romans chapter 5 and verse 8, it spells it out so clearly. God demonstrates his own love for us in this. While we were still sinners, Christ died for us. God didn't wait us to clean our act up, first of all, and then say, I'll love you. If you keep your side of the bargain, then I'll love you. He loves us unconditionally. He has entered into a covenant promise. We're going to celebrate that covenant promise this morning, that when Jesus took the bread and the cup, he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for many for the forgiveness of sins. And that's how God relates to us. I will forgive you. And I love you unconditionally. And that is the heart of covenant love. That is what a Christian understanding of marriage is all about. But you don't understand, you know, the things this person... No, that's true, I don't understand you. But God does. And God offers his grace and his strength. I become so disappointed, so dreadfully disappointed with people who tell me, on one hand, I'm deeply committed to Jesus, and on the other, my partner's not meeting my needs, so I'm walking out on them. No Christians in 2,000 years have ever spoken like that until Christians in our generation, and somehow we feel we're different. And we can walk away from this lifelong commitment that we've made. And it's growing, growing like a plague. Which brings me to my fourth point. This is a lifelong calling to love and to cherish until death parts us. And I pledge you my word. You know, to cherish, very special word. It means to care lovingly and tenderly. I thought I'll set some homework this morning. For those of you who are married, when you get home today, why don't you ask your partner, do you feel cherished? If you dare ask, I guess. Do you feel cherished? So I thought I'd better do my homework myself. So when I thought of this bright idea, I wandered down to Marge and said, do you feel cherished? She said, oh, there's a sermon coming up, isn't there? And she said, cherished is a pretty strong word. Do I feel cherished? She said, well, I feel cared for. You care for me. She said, I feel looked after. You look after me. She said, and you let me spend your money. So, yes, she said, I feel cherished. She said, you remind me of that fella in Fiddler on the Roof, you know, Do you love me? You may not all know the story of the Fiddler on the Roof, so I thought we'd have a look at that priceless little incident in the movie, Fiddler on the Roof.
Golder! Golder!
Hello, Golder. Have some soup.
Something very important to tell you.
Have the soup. It's warm.
Golder, I've just met Percheek and Hoddle.
Well?
Well, they seem to be very fond of each other.
So? What do you mean?
So, I've decided to give them my permission to become engaged. I'll eat later.
What? Just like that, without even asking me?
Who asks you? I'm the father.
Who is he? A pauper. He has nothing, absolutely nothing.
I wouldn't say that. I hear... as a rich uncle.
A rich uncle.
Golder, he's a good man. I like him. He's a little crazy, but I like him. And what's more important, Hoddle likes him. Hoddle loves him. So what can we do? It's a new world, Golder. A new world. Love. Golder, do you love me?
Do I what?
Do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well?
With our daughters getting married and this trouble in the town, you're upset, you're worn out. Go inside, go lie down. Maybe it's indigestion.
No, Golda, I'm asking you a question. Do you love me?
You're a fool.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love you?
Well.
For 25 years I've washed your clothes, cooked your meals, cleaned your house, given you children, milked your cow. After 25 years, why talk about love right now?
Golden, the first time I met you was on our wedding day. I was scared.
I was shy.
I was nervous.
So was I.
But my father and my mother said we'd learn to love each other. And now I'm asking, Golden, do you love me?
I'm your wife.
I know. But do you love me?
Do I love him?
Well?
For 25 years I've lived with him, fought with him, starved with him. 25 years my bed is his. If that's not love, what is?
And you love me.
I suppose I do.
And I suppose I love you too. It doesn't change a thing, but even so, after 25 years, it's nice to know.
So you might like to try the homework. Do you feel cherished? Until death parts us. I was watching a Hollywood movie once, and they had this, they went through the marriage vow, you know, I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, sickness and in health, to love and to cherish, so long as we both shall love. So, well, sounds romantic, doesn't it? But in other words, one day I wake up and realize I don't love him anymore. So I'm out of here. It isn't an option in a Christian marriage because I've pledged you my word. When Dietrich Bonhoeffer was imprisoned by the Gestapo towards the end of the Second World War, his niece got married and he wrote a sermon for her wedding that was taken out and read at her wedding. And in the course of this sermon that he wrote, he said this: just as it is the crown and not merely the will to rule that makes the king, so it is marriage and not merely your love for each other that joins you together in the sight of God and man. It is not your love that sustains marriage, but from now on the marriage that sustains your love. That is almost the total opposite of what everyone thinks today. So in conclusion, I'd just like to kind of elaborate a bit on what he was saying, that everyone would think it's your love that sustains your marriage. Bonhoeffer's saying, no, it's actually the other way around. It's the marriage that sustains your love. And the illustration he uses is of someone becoming the king. Someone doesn't become the king because they want to be the king. Someone becomes the king because the crown is placed on their head. And if a few days later they wake up one day and I don't feel I want to be the king anymore, in a sense it doesn't matter. They are the king. The crown's been placed on their head. And the same way, when your relationship goes through difficult times and you don't feel you love each other anymore, you can be sustained by the thought that we are married. We have been joined together in the sight of God and others. We have been united together. That can sustain us. I have given my word. I will take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish until death parts us. Now, any marriage strikes difficulties. I've never met a marriage that hasn't encountered difficulties somewhere along the road. There's always going to be misunderstandings. One or other are going to do something that lets the side down and lets the other person down. And in those difficult times, what sustains you? It's no use saying, oh, our love sustains us, because you may not feel particularly loving in a situation like that. It's the marriage sustains you. It's the covenant love that you've entered into in relationship to God and to one another. I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, to love and to cherish until death parts us. I pledge you my word. And that is covenant love. And that can sustain people in even the darkest hour. And Jesus gave us this amazing, amazing sign so that we would remember the nature of covenant love. And he met with his disciples on the night when he was betrayed. And he took the bread and he said, this is my body, which is given for you. And he broke it and said to them, take, eat. And after supper, he took the cup and he said, this cup is the new covenant in my blood, which is shed for many for the forgiveness of sins. And so Jesus this morning invites us to respond to his covenant love. Will you do that? Because when you take the bread and you drink from the cup, once again you are responding to the covenant love of Jesus. And in the same way for those of you who are married, you can use this time to respond to one another. You have pledged yourselves to each other. You have said, I will take you for better, for worse. This was Jesus in this act saying to us, I take you for better, for worse, for richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health. I will love you and cherish you, not just till you die, but throughout all eternity. And to us, he invites us to make a response. Let's pray together. Oh God, we want to thank you for the wonder of your covenant love, that we are utterly undeserving, and yet you entered into a relationship of love with us. And we praise you for that, O God. Thank you for the signs of this love that we have here. And Lord, a lot of us here are married. We have entered into a covenant relationship with another. And Lord, I pray that this time we spend here may give us an opportunity to renew our response to that expression of covenant love that has been given to us, because we ask it in Jesus' name. Amen. Now, you can take the communion this morning in one of two ways. You can take it seated there in your seat and the servers will come around and serve you with it. Alternatively, this morning, you may like to come and kneel at the front here, and we'll give you, there'll be folks here at the front who will give you communion. There may be some of you who, as a couple, may like to come forward and receive communion at the front here this morning, and we will pray with you while you're doing that, or maybe individually you have something that you'd like prayer for. And so just come and kneel at the front here, and we'll give you the communion and pray for you here at the front. So with the service line.